Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth, the meditations of all of our hearts, and that wonderful singing be your voice to us this day, our God. May we hear you. Speak, for we are your people and we are listening. Amen. You remember a movie called Evan Almighty? It came out now some years ago. And in it, Steve Carell plays an average guy with a regular job and a normal family until God, who looks a lot like Morgan Freeman, shows up and tells him to build an ark because there's about to be a big flood in town. Now, that story should be sounding familiar to you. It takes a while for Evan to take seriously the possibility that God is actually talking to him. But eventually, he realizes that God won't leave him alone. And so he just gives in and begins to listen to what God is telling him to do. And eventually, his whole family gets involved.
You're really him, aren't you?
You want more proof? I haven't done the pillar of salt thing in a while.
That's all right. I believe you. I don't understand why you chose me.
You want to change the world, son. So do I.
What? Why an ark? I mean, that's like flood territory. You wouldn't do that again. You wouldn't do that. Would you do that?
Let's just say that whatever I do, I do because I love you.
Well, then you have to understand that this whole building an ark thing is really not part of my plans here. I need to settle into my house. I need to make a good impression at work. What?
Your plans.
What are you talking? We're talking about an ark, right? I mean, an ark? An ark is huge. I don't even know where I would begin.
Al, I hear that a lot. People want to change the world, don't know how to begin. You want to know how to change the world, son? One act of random kindness at a time.
Coming right up. Excuse me, are you all right?
Yeah. No, it's a long story.
Well, I like stories. I'm considered a bit of a storyteller myself.
My husband, have you heard of New York's Noah?
The guy who's building the ark.
That's him.
I love that story. Noah in the ark. You know, a lot of people miss the point of that story. They think it's about God's wrath and anger. They love it when God gets angry.
What is the story about then, the ark?
Well, I think it's a love story about believing in each other. You know, the animals showed up in pairs. They stood by each other, side by side, just like Noah and his family. Everybody entered the ark side by side.
But my husband says God told him to do it. What do you do with that?
Sounds like an opportunity. Let me ask you something. If someone prays for patience, you think God gives them patience? Or does he give them the opportunity to be patient? If they prayed for courage, does God give them courage? Or does he give them opportunity to be courageous? If someone prayed for the family to be closer, do you think God zaps them with warm, fuzzy feelings? Or does it give them opportunities to love each other? Well, I gotta run. A lot of people to serve. Enjoy.
I wish God would show up as Morgan Freeman in my life. wish God would take things over in some clear and visible and obvious way so that I didn't have to work so hard at figuring out what voices and which events in my life are God talking to me and what is just life the way it happens. I don't want to be a screwball who imagines into things some magic or meaning that isn't actually there. Someone who thinks God is calling them up frequently might be delusional. But still, I would like it if God were a more real presence in my life. A voice and a face that I could recognize as readily as I do Morgan Freeman's. If God just had some way to call me to attention, because I am so darn prone to wandering away. How do we develop the kind of sensitivity that it takes to hear God speaking to us when that voice comes only in a whisper? What does it take to notice God's presence when it appears not just in a Bible story or at church, but in what happens to me today? How can I be guided by the Spirit in those moments when I'm feeling anything but sure of the right thing to do? We're coming to the end of this series of 12 steps that we've been immersed in all summer. The 12-step spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. As I've preached these sermons each week, not only to you but to myself, I've become convinced that the point of all of these steps is to guide us back over and over again to the third step, which is to surrender. Every other step is a tool for knowing ourselves well enough and trusting God fully enough to make a decision that we have to make not just once, but every day, maybe every moment, to let go and turn our often out of control lives over to God's care and direction. Many of the steps invite us to focus on knowing ourselves. Take inventory of your inner life. Confess and repair the ways you have hurt other people. Acknowledge that in the most persistently troublesome areas of your life, you really might be powerless to improve yourself. And today we come to the 10th and 11th steps. The 10th step is a reminder to stop regularly, to pause long enough to see what's below the surface of your life. We continued to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it, this step says. Smart. Those really good, smart AA folks know that when you don't stop long enough to look at yourself in a mirror that tells the truth, when you're on automatic pilot, everything that goes wrong looks like it's someone else's fault. The 11th step is another stop message. It says, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Here's what that means. It means keep practicing the presence of God until God's face and voice are as familiar, as recognizable as Morgan Freeman's. Take the time to practice, this step says. You know, some vague belief in a higher power is easy, but it takes practice to get to the point where you're willing to invite that God into the hard places of your life, to remember God in the moments when you actually need God most. Practice to recognize the scrapes that require you to surrender instead of hanging on to control until everything that matters has your fingernail marks in it. You can only find the presence of God in those moments by practicing the presence of God all the rest of the time. You learn to pay attention to the Spirit's nearness so that you won't miss it when it slides in quietly next to you. I'm starting to think that the things that matter most in life are things we can't make happen all at once, no matter how hard we try or how much we concentrate our effort. If you've been watching the Olympics in this last week, you've seen swimmers and gymnasts and runners who are so clear about what they want to accomplish that they have spent their whole lives practicing. Every day. They get up at 5 o'clock every morning and jump into a pool of icy water. They keep running on all those hot days when they don't feel like it. They stay with their workout schedule on days they can't even remember why this is important. I'd like to be an Olympic athlete. I'm pretty sure I don't have the gifts, but if I did, I doubt I would have the discipline. I think I'm more like a character from a story I used to read my daughter called Frog and Toad Together. You know this story? Frog bakes a batch of cookies. We really ought to stop eating, Frog and Toad both say after they've had several cookies. But they keep on eating. We must stop, they resolve. And then they eat some more. We need willpower, Frog says as he grabs one more cookie. What's willpower? Toad asks, with his mouth full of crumbs. Willpower is trying very hard not to do something you want to do very much, Frog answers. And then he goes on to list a whole bunch of things that they can do to help their willpower. They can put cookies in a box, tie the box shut, put the box up in a tree. Toad points out that if they wanted to, they could just climb up the tree and get the box and untie it. And Frog gets so frustrated with his friends not understanding that finally he just dumps the rest of the cookies on the ground. Now we have no more cookies, Toad says sadly. Yes, says Frog, but we have lots and lots of willpower. You can have your old willpower, Toad says. I'm going home to bake a cake. Just like willpower, we can't force spiritual transformation to happen inside of us right now. It's not about concentrating harder or talking ourselves into it. It's about training, about practice. You learn to play Bach on the piano by practicing scales with your fingers on that keyboard every day for years. You train to win swimming races by getting in the pool and swimming laps every day. You develop forgiveness and gratitude and courage by practicing. You keep practicing them until those character traits grow naturally inside of you, even when you're not thinking about them. The same truth applies for how we come to see God. We learn to recognize God's voice by searching for it, listening to it in our prayers until we know what that voice sounds like. We keep walking on the path of service and justice and self-giving because that's the same road Jesus walks on, and we just might run into him there. We pay attention to the Bible's stories because they give us clues about the ways that God has appeared before in faithful people's lives. Because those are the same ways we might find God showing up in our lives. It's not the practices themselves, the prayer or Bible reading or worship or service, that are God. You don't have to do those things to earn God's favor. They have value because they exercise our senses, the senses that need to be alert so that we will notice every time God is present. When we engage in the practices of faith, we are training ourselves to recognize God's face, to know the sound of God's voice. Because the truth is that God will show up almost every time in the moments when you weren't looking for God at all. It's when you're all about doing whatever it is you do in your normal everyday life that God is most likely to disrupt your schedule, or startle you out of your routine, or shift things so that you can see them differently. Those are the moments you practice for. Trained your senses so that when it happens, you'll see that interruption as a call to attention and not as an annoyance. The passage that Carl read this morning from the Gospel of Luke contains the lesson that Jesus repeated most often about prayer. He said over and over again to his disciples, "Just keep at it." If it feels like you're knocking on God's door and he's not opening, Jesus said, keep knocking. Be persistent, even stubborn. Keep doing it as if someone is listening. Show up looking for a miracle to happen. Keep on beating down that path to God's door. Because the one thing you can be sure of is that the path you beat down, even with your prayers that seem automatic or unsure or not working, that's the same path that God can use to find you. Amen.